Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, July 1st. Well, if you have kids, you know it can be a struggle to even get them to eat. Our guest today will take it a step further. They specialize in teaching kids to cook. Crazy, you say? Well, perhaps, but we'll find out. We're joined today by chef instructor John Winnick of the cooking school at Market Bistro, and he's here with team leader Nancy Huggins, and they're here to answer your questions or suggest, they'll take your suggestions or recipes or anything you want. We'll talk about maybe kids cooking and some of the fun things that go on there. It's a Food Friday, wide open for your calls right now, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, Food Friday after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It is a Food Friday, and what fun we will have today. Joining us is John Winnick, chef instructor at the cooking school at Market Bistro in Latham. He has over 30 years' extensive cooking and teaching experience, including working at, in Saratoga and Hudson Falls, all over the place. Also served as president of the Glens Falls American Culinary Federation. Also joining us today is Nancy Huggins, who's a team leader over at the cooking school at Market Bistro. She studied culinary arts at Schenectady Community College, specializing in baking, which automatically makes her one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. We want to hear from you today. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551 on this Food Friday. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, or tweet us at WAMCVoxPop, or go to Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC radio. And there should be a Vox Pop post there. But again, the phone number here is 800-348-2551. John and Nancy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Got to get a little closer, Nancy. I know that's your first
thank
time.
You.
That's better. John's an old pro. He was here around Thanksgiving time. And so the cooking school at Market Bistro, we talked a little bit about that at Thanksgiving time. And I just gathered it was for grown-ups who wanted to learn their way around the kitchen. But then, before we started the show, you say you're doing this thing with kids, which I think is absolute insanity, man. How do you do it?
Well, a lot of patience.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And you have to be very careful. And safety comes first when you're dealing with children, especially the age groups that we have. We have two age groups. One is the taste buds, and they're ages 5 through 8.
Yeah.
And then we have another one that's junior chefs, and they're 9 and up.
And you let them have sharp objects?
Good question. No.
We use
these acrylic serrated knives, which are great for cutting fruits and vegetables, and that gets them the technique down. We talk about the grip and how to handle a knife. And the older kids, we will let them handle a knife, but we give them a safety glove to use as well.
So, I mean, you know, I have several children, and one can cook ramen noodles pretty well. But, I mean, most kids are, they're not that handy.
Well,
most adults are not that handy.
Well, to be honest with you, I push them a little bit, and I want them to not be afraid, and I want them to have confidence in the kitchen so the parents are confident to have them in the kitchen. One of the things I did with my kids growing up is I just had them right with me and right side by side and let them handle the knife and let them get on the stove and just talk to them about safety and the importance of that.
Most kids are very curious in general, and when you're dealing with these classes, and how long have you been doing these classes?
About 2.5 years.
2.5 years. So do you see every now and then see one who's, you say, well, that kid has the spark. That kid gets it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nancy, tell them about the one girl.
We had one student. She's probably taken about 6 classes with us, and she tried out for Junior Chef down in New York. And she got to go twice, and she said, well, the first time I went down, all they had me do was cook an egg, and I had to leave. And I said to her, well, maybe they figured if you couldn't cook an egg, they didn't want you on Junior Chef. But she went back for a second interview, but then unfortunately didn't get any further. But some are very, very good, and a lot of them are very intense.
Yes. I think they watch the cooking channels. So they have their favorite show, their favorite chef, their favorite foods, their favorite restaurants. These kids come and they're ready to go. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an interesting phenomenon, and I see it in my house too. Several of my daughters watch the cooking shows,
mm-hmm.
and one day they were watching Beat Bobby Flay, and there's Rick Orlando on.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
And I impressed them. I said, "Oh, that guy's been on my show," and they said, "Oh, really? Well, now we're impressed with your show. But they hadn't been for the whole time. We're joined today by John Winnick and Nancy Huggins of the Cooking School at Market Bistro. And, you know, we'll talk about getting kids to cook or great recipe ideas for kids. Or if you have any general summer cooking questions, we can do that as well. We have a chef in the house. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. So take us through the basic level course.
Well, I guess the most basic level course is we will start out with some baking, because then you're not so much at the stove. You're not using a knife. You're measuring. You're mixing. You're following a recipe. And then you put it together with them step-by-step process. And that's where the kids really need to learn to focus on the recipe in front of them, the steps that it takes, the science behind it, and then the math. And then they get to see the finished product. You know, we'll do anything from cupcakes to cookies. What else have we done, Nancy?
We've made pizzas. We've made breads with them. we bake a lot of stuff.
You know, baking, we've had so many chefs on this show, and so many of the chefs say, I don't bake. Mm. That's something I do not do.
It's chemistry, baking, yeah. Where cooking is not.
Yeah, so. And I've had jobs throughout my career where I've been forced to bake. You know, you're a chef, you should be able to bake.
Right.
It may not be your forte. I enjoy baking when it's the only thing I have to do. I can focus on the recipe and follow it, like when I made these wonderful cupcakes I brought you.
You made these cupcakes?
I made these cupcakes.
Or did you make Nancy do it?
No, I did them.
Okay. Now, are you going to critique them, Nancy?
Yeah.
I might. I made the cupcakes the other day for
the class.
Okay, so you can judge them against yours. That's good. No, they look delicious, I'll tell you that. Now, it's funny you mentioned, Nancy, science. And so I often wonder how much of this is science and how much of this is art.
Well, baking is certainly both, as is cooking, because if it doesn't look nice, people are less likely to want to eat it, because John always says, you know, people eat with their eyes first. So that's part of the art. And you look at some of the TV shows like Cupcake Wars, where they're taking these creations and making them fantastic.
Yeah, that's a funny show.
Yeah, and so that's art as well, but if they don't taste good. So you can't tweak recipes baking like you can cooking. You can't say, oh, I'm going to add a little bit extra of this, because it can really throw
so
it out of
whack. So you don't.
Whack.
In other words, you follow that recipe to the letter? This is another question I have.
You're supposed to. Do I always know? I don't personally.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Right. But, and that has to do with experience.
Experience, right. I know what I can switch and what I can't a little bit, you know, and some things really have to be exact.
Right. You can't mess with the ratios too much, but you can mess with the flavorings somewhat. Mm. And even techniques sometimes, depending on your outcome.
So then the kids, let's say the young ones get through this. How long is the course? Or is it just one-day classes?
Usually they're one-day classes.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the boot camps in a minute, but the individual classes for the little kids, the 5 to 8-year-olds, are 1.5 hours in length, and that's a good time for them. 2 hours for the other class, the nine and ups.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the nine and ups, they're doing things that are a little more complicated.
A little more challenging, a little more knife work. We're at the stove, we're grilling, we're sauteing, we're roasting. There's so much more they can do. They have the motor skills, and all they need to do is see a visual usually. And if you're standing right there next to them, they just want to do it just like you're doing it. And that's pretty awesome.
It strikes me that, at some age they grow out of it, but younger kids can be very finicky and they won't eat certain things, at least mine are that way.
Right.
But I think maybe if you see it in the preparation, you may be a little more adventurous in trying.
Well, and we encourage them to always try, because we do offer a lot of things that they find exotic. When we do like a pizza class, we put toppings on there that they might not ordinarily think of, because of course they're thinking pepperoni.
Yeah.
So we put broccoli, and we'd show them how to roast a pepper and things like that. And we really encourage them just to taste it, because now it's here. You don't have to eat it. You know, there's no rules at the cooking school, so you have to clean your plate or anything. We make ranch dip from scratch, ranch dressing, almost every class, and
dip
vegetables, because they think it comes out of a bottle.
Well, it does, right?
Not in our school.
Why don't you give us the simple recipe for a ranch dressing?
Okay. The basic recipe is equal parts of sour cream.
Right.
And you can either use mayonnaise as your other base, or a yogurt, which is a little healthier.
What about buttermilk?
I'm glad you said that, because buttermilk's always in the recipe, and you kind of add that to thin it out, because otherwise it's too thick. And then we always add the fresh herbs. your fresh dill, chives, parsley. And the kids, every time I add an ingredient, ew. But then the finished product, they're like, this is yummy.
Valuable lesson. Valuable lesson. Yeah. We should try some ranch on the cupcakes.
No, thank you.
Okay. We're joined today by Nancy Huggins and Chef John Winnick today. And let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. Oh, let's taste the cupcakes.
Support for WAMC comes from Big Y. For over 80 years, family-owned and operated market with four locations in the Berkshires with locally grown produce, fresh meat, and seafood. BigY.com. Curran Compliance Services Incorporated, Greenwich, New York, and St. Paul, Minnesota. National compliance and regulatory consultants for life insurance carriers and their distribution partners. CurranCompliance.com. Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, located in the Old Town Hall, Sunderland, Massachusetts. Open Tuesday through Sunday at 5, featuring outdoor dining on the patio and front porch throughout the summer. BlueHeronDining.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts. A food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery. rivervalley.coop.
It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number here on a, it's going to be a tornado watch here. So we have a tornado watch in effect until 10 p.m. for the region. Now, a tornado watch, don't panic at this point. It means the conditions are favorable for the formation of tornadoes. But be aware of your surroundings, and we'll keep you posted here if there are any upgrades to warnings. All right, the cupcake is fabulous. What do we got here?
You have a classic Boston cream pie. So it's basically a vanilla cake as a base. Then I hollowed out the cake after it was cooled down, and we piped in a vanilla custard.
Yeah.
And then we topped it with a chocolate ganache. And this is everything the kids will be doing when we do our summer road trip boot camp coming up in July and August.
Boot camp?
Yeah.
So what do?
Well, it's
you
kind
run
of
run 6 miles and then you cook some.
Well, I might want to do that to wear them out. But basically they come in and this is going to be 3-4 hour sessions.
Yeah.
And they're going to do everything from, we're going to do Taste of New England. So we're going to make some clam chowder. We're going to show them how to make a soup, which is important. And it'll also give them some knife skills. Then we're going to make some biscuits to go along with it. So a little bit baking as well, because this is the cooking, and we want to do a little cooking and a little baking, because that all the kids seem to want to do that.
Yeah.
They don't just want to cook. Sometimes they like to bake. Then we're going to do the classic corn dog. Kids love corn dogs.
How do you make a corn dog?
Well, you put it on a hot dog or sausage or anything like that on a stick, and you make a batter, like a cornmeal batter. You dip it, and then you put it right in the fryer until
it's
crispy.
How do you get it to stick to the dog?
Well, you use a little bit of cornstarch. You take cornstarch and put it on the hot dog, you dredge it in there, and then the batter sticks right to it. That's a trick.
So you need a deep fryer for that.
You either need a deep fryer or like a Dutch oven or a cast iron skillet.
You can do it in a Dutch oven?
Oh, sure you can. As long as you regulate the oil, temperature of the oil, you can do it.
So, in other words, Ray would probably burn the house down.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe that's not a good idea. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Chris in Cooperstown. Chris, you're on.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about, I make no-knead bread, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with, it's a popular recipe that was published in the New York Times from the Sullivan Street Bakery. And it's a great thing where you mix up your bread and you don't have to knead it. You just let time do the work. And there's a step. After it rises, it's long rise, you pull the dough out and flop it over for like, and let it sit for like 10 minutes. And then you move on to, you know, letting it rise again and cooking it. And I don't understand at all that middle step. Like what, and this might be an obscure question, but I don't know what to do. Am I supposed to, it says keep it covered in that step. Is that just to keep dust out, or should I seal it covered because there's off-gassing of something? I just don't understand how that step is useful, what it's for, and if you have any insight, I would be curious.
Sure, Chris. Basic bread-making skills, most of them call you to knead the bread. So I'm unfamiliar with this technique. However, to answer one part of your question, you know, during the fermentation process or the rising process, which most breads need to do twice, in between there, you do want to keep it covered with like a tea towel or something dry. You want to cover it so that it doesn't dry out and it forms that skin on the outside, like anything else you'd want to keep covered. But as far as the no-knead process, I'm not familiar with
that. What about Nancy? She's the baking expert. Come on over to the microphone here. Join us.
I would say that instead of kneading, it's telling you to turn it out and then let it rise again just in place of the kneading. Because like you said, it has to rise twice.
Right.
You would normally knead the bread before you put it in and then again. So I think it's just telling you to take it out and just, since it's a no-knead bread, you don't need to knead it. You need to just get some of the air out and then you got to let it rise up again.
Right.
And I guess, I should have mixed results and I don't know. I guess I don't understand enough of the chemistry of what's actually going on in there, but it's that question of like when it says and then cover and let sit. Am I like, you know, should it be sealed or not? Because is it just a dust cover? In which case I'll throw anything on it. But if I'm just the plastic wrap it tight or something, then it sounds like that's not the case.
You don't want to plastic wrap it tight because it's going to rise again.
Right.
So if you do that, you're going to inhibit the process from being able to take place. And again, you're keeping it covered so it doesn't form a tough skin on it, because then when you do go to roll your bread, you're going to have that extra crusty part.
Yeah.
Right. And kneading. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to, say thank you. You basically answered my question, but keep talking, please.
Amazing. That's incredible. Well, Chris, we'll let you go and we'll keep talking, but thank you for the call. Well, that's one for one.
Yeah.
Great job. 800-348-2551. Don't worry, there's plenty of time to fail. Let's go to Ryan in Norfolk, Connecticut. Ryan, you're on.
Hi. I have a quick question about cookies. I am like making chocolate chip and peanut butter cookies all the time.
Yummy.
And either the dough, I always put it in the fridge to cool it off, but either the dough would, when I bake it, the cookie will come out like cake. It's like really thick, or it will come out really thin. Is there like correct temperature for baking?
I love it. The correct dough temperature. All right, hang in there, Ryan.
Yeah.
You're putting it in the refrigerator before you bake it and before you scoop it. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Okay. What I would do, if you're having that, I would try scooping it and then putting it in the refrigerator if you think you want to make it cool. And then when they're coming out so fat, it's like they're not melting down, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the problem.
Okay. What you could do, and what we used to do at a bakery I used to work at, we just would squash them down before we put them in the oven.
Well, that's cheating.
Well, you know, it just helps them to achieve that level without having to sink all the way down.
You can use the bottom of a glass or something like that. Yeah, we do that with peanut butter cookies all the time.
What grade are you in, Ryan?
I'm going into 8th.
Wow, that's so cool. How long have you been baking?
Since I was little. I got into cooking since I was like 5 years old or 6 years old.
Wow. Nice.
You started earlier than I did.
And girls love women, or girls love men who can cook and bake.
Hey, there you go. Hey, good job. Hey, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.
800-348-2551 is the phone number, 800-348-2551. All right, so when you're making cookies, butter, shortening? I mean, I thought butter made them more crispy.
What I learned in school, at culinary school, was would you prefer to put a spoonful of butter in your mouth or a spoonful of Crisco?
I think it all depends on your budget, too.
Correct.
And where you're baking.
I personally use butter.
Yeah, me too.
Because it just tastes the best. Crisco would give you a crispier cookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you use like a substitute butter, it's got a lot more water in it. It's going to alter your recipe somewhat.
Yeah. So it's all butter all the time.
That's what I do. It's
a preference.
Yes.
Now you can meet the happy medium and use that butter flavored Crisco.
Yeah.
Where we use that at BOCES when I was teaching there.
Yeah.
And that was mainly for budgetary because we did so many cookies, and it was easier to incorporate into the cookie dough because it was always nice and room temperature, whereas butter, you got to pull it out and let it soften.
Absolutely. So, yeah. What about bacon fat? Can you make chocolate chip cookies with bacon fat?
I'll bet you can.
I'll bet you can, too.
Nancy, could you do that next time you come on?
I will.
I'll be your test case.
Okay.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Chef John Winnick at Nancy Huggins of the Cooking School at Market Bistro. So the boot camps, it's an interesting concept. So it's a fairly intense schedule.
Well, we try to pack a lot in a couple of, it's 3 or 4 hours long, several days in a row. So you get the kids and you get them every day.
Good, you get a rhythm.
Absolutely. And the kids aren't coming in and saying, oh, I got to get used to the space and the surrounding. After day one, you got them. You're hooked. They're hooked. And the promise of what we're going to do tomorrow. And to be honest with you, making it and preparing it, that's fun. But the best part is when they sit down and they eat what they've made. And they're very proud. They take pictures. And they say, always save some for mom and dad or their brother or sister.
Well, I had a feeling they'll be pretty happy if they make cupcakes and get to eat those. Let's go over to Dave in Kingston. Dave, you're on.
Yeah, because I heard the young man call in, the baker.
Yeah.
And there was actually a recall on gold medal flour causing some type of food poisoning. And just want to remind people, don't eat raw cookie dough. Not healthy.
No, delicious but not healthy. So don't do it.
Delicious but not healthy. It's not just the eggs and the milk, sometimes the flour.
Okay.
Yep.
You make a point.
Good point.
Do you have anything? You have a second point or are you done?
I'm all done.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Have a great weekend. 800-348-2551. Over to Henry in Earl, New York. Henry, you're on.
Hello. I'd like to say to the caller, Chris, he said about the no-knead bread.
Yeah.
I make that quite often, and the middle step is not actually necessary. You do want to put the bread into the bowl, put the towel on the top of it, let it rise for a specified amount of time. But you don't need to take it out if you don't want to.
Okay,
it actually works just fine. Just take it out, put it into the pan. You can have a hot pan, pretty warmed, or just put it into the pan cold. Cook it at around, 420 degrees, and the middle step is really not required.
All right.
I'm glad you kind of called back on that because I had never heard of that particular technique, and now I might steal that one.
Oh, there you go. Well, thanks, Henry. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday, 800-348-2551. So, summertime, right? You guys do some grilling?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you teach? Can you teach that?
Absolutely.
See, I'm a gifted savant when it comes to grilling. You can't teach me.
You know, and a lot of people have that, already in. They've learned it from their father, their grandfather. Grilling is a technique. It's a dry cooking technique. So it's just like pan searing or roasting. You have to have the temperature right. You got to be seasoned. You got to be patient. One of the things I always tell people in the cooking school is make sure you preheat your pan, your grill pan. We use a grill pan, a cast iron grill pan.
I know a lot of, in fact, I've talked to some of my neighbors who are doing that.
Yeah.
It's never occurred to me, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, so
we don't have a grill. So.
We don't have an outdoor grill. We'd love one, but we make do with what we have, and it's all about the technique and that good sear and the seasoning. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. John and Warren Mass. John, how's the weather out there?
It's beautiful, but I hope it's going to rain.
Well, we have tornado watches. I don't know if it's getting all the way to you, but a big part of the region is under a tornado watch at this time.
Well, you can just bring the rain part,
All right, man. Well, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, my question is, you go on the internet and you find, you look up recipes of all kinds, and I'm a decent cook, but my question is, where do you find really high-end, fancy recipes?
Well, I'm glad.
Is there a place that you can find that?
Well, what I do when I'm looking for recipes is I'll type what I want to cook or make, and then I scroll through. And now the sites that I use a lot, to be honest with you, are the Food Network, because I know they've been tried and true. They've gone through a test kitchen. Epicurious is a good one. Nancy, do you have any that you use?
Gourmet,
okay.
Gourmet is one. I do the same as John. I look through, and I might compare five recipes till I find the one that I think is the one that is
That's kind of what I do, is I find three or four different recipes and kind of merge them to what I think is going to be better.
And you know what, John? The internet's a great tool, but people forget about the good old cookbook. And some of the cookbooks, there's cookbooks out there that are specific for high end, and some of these chefs have written these cookbooks and they've done these tests.
All right, time out. What are we talking about here with high end? I mean, I think it's either good or not good. Well, explain to me what you mean.
Well, it's either good or not. I mean, like for a fancy dinner party where you wanted the presentation to look really nice.
Right. Whistles and bells too.
Yeah, whistles and bells. That's right. Yep.
But I mean, the presentation.
Yeah, and you're right about cookbooks. I got this really nice French cookbook. It's a huge cookbook and it does have really nice recipes to follow. So that is true. So, okay. Thanks a lot.
John, have a great weekend. So the presentation aspect of the whole thing, I would imagine that would be something that really requires quite a bit of experience. When you're teaching kids, what can you possibly expect? The bar has to be set fairly low.
You'd be surprised.
You'd be surprised, though. Yesterday we had the kids decorating cupcakes. None of them had ever handled a pastry bag in their life. But we had some beautiful artistic, the way they were, their technique was good. We showed them once, and then they just went to town.
Okay, and who cleaned up after that?
Oh,
that's our job.
Okay, because I can see some disasters
the
happening.
The beauty of the cooking school is you don't clean.
Yeah. We are joined today by John Winnick, chef instructor, and Nancy Huggins, a team leader over at the cooking school at Market Bistro in Latham, New York. Let's go to Yakov in Clifton Park. You're on.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, guys. I have a question for you, please. I'm baking no-knead artisan bread. I really love it. Everything tastes fine, looks fine, smells beautifully. The only question I have, how can I make this bread a little bit less dense? Because my kids think it's too kind of heavy. So how can I make it a little lighter or less dense?
So by design, it's probably more dense, right?
I was just saying that a kneading process gives the bread structure and gives it the gluten that it needs to have the right structure. And now you can over-knead it, so that's kind
of
one.
What type of flour are you using?
I'm baking no-knead bread.
Right.
Right.
Right. And so what Nancy wants to know, what kind of flour are you using, Yakov?
Regular flour, white flour.
You could try sifting it. That might help you make it a little bit lighter. It would actually make you use a little bit less flour, the sifting process. That might do it for you.
You could increase the fermentation time, the rising time, to make it lighter as well.
Increase it or decrease?
Increase.
So make it go longer.
Yep.
Make it longer.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically these two things, right?
I would start there. Yeah, keep it simple and then experiment and let us know how you make out.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. Have a great weekend. Our number is 800-348-2551. So why, I mean, this is all new to me and I'm just a radio guy, but why would you want to make bread and not knead it?
That's a great question.
I'm guessing it's a time thing.
Yeah. Wouldn't it take longer, though, if you didn't need it?
Well, it's like they do with the bread machines. Those, you just put it in the machine and walk away, right? Does the machine need it?
The machine needs it.
It
turns it.
Oh, yeah.
When I make bread, I look forward to the kneading process.
To me, too.
Yep.
But we're going to try this no-knead bread now because I got to see what it's like.
I saw you write that down. So, I mean, so the kneading itself adds room for the air or the gas to expand? Is that?
It works the gluten. In the bread.
What does the gluten do?
And it stretches.
Gives it the chew that the bread needs to have.
Ah.
All right. That's why I'm wondering about this no knead. I wonder, and he said it's dense. I think it's not worked at all. It's not spread out. You're not moving things. You take away the chemistry and some of the science behind it,
I guess. This was in the New York Times. So obviously.
Yeah. Somebody played with it.
It will be a trendy thing now, and I'm sure we'll hear about this on coming programs. By the way, if you're just tuning in, the National Weather Service has issued a tornado watch. It's a watch, not a warning, until about 10 p.m. for the region. Tornado watch means conditions are favorable for the formation of tornadoes. And, of course, our news team is watching the weather, and they will come in immediately if there is there is a weather warning. You guys have to drive back to Latham after this,
Yeah, we have a class tonight.
All right, so just be safe. Stay low to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy, don't stick your head out the window.
I'm the driver.
Oh, you're the driver?
I know the city.
She could be a taxi driver.
Oh, really? So, you know, there's a red light cam up here around the corner, so just
I know. I'm an
careful.
Albany girl.
All right, let's go over to Jackie and Byrne. Jackie, you're on.
Hi. The gentleman called her earlier looking for a high-end recipe collection.
Yeah.
If he's got like 3 weeks with nothing to do, the French Laundry Cookbook by Thomas Keller.
Mm-hmm.
Great
There's
book.
Some beautiful things in there. There's some incredible recipes, but you need a lot of time. Mm-hmm. A lot of time.
Why? How big is the book?
So
it's
it's not so much the big of the book. It's a big book.
It's you have to
it's
comprehend
it's very complex.
It.
A lot of the recipes are very complex.
Yeah.
Okay. And have you
but
read?
It's fantastic.
So you've read this, Jackie.
I've read it. I've cooked a couple things out of it, and I even tried to get into French Laundry one year. We couldn't get in.
Oh. So you're pretty good at this stuff? You're a good cook?
I've kind of deferred to my husband because now he's retired and I have to work for a living. So he's doing it more than I.
Hey, if you're reading the French Laundry and cooking out of there, I'm impressed.
Good
for
you.
It's a great book.
Yeah. Well, that one and Cook's Magazine, too, is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No advertising.
Oh, very nice. Well, Jackie, thanks a lot. Have a good weekend.
You too. Stay safe.
Bye now. 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Chef John Winnick, chef instructor at the cooking school at Market Bistro in Latham, and also team leader Nancy Huggins. We look forward to your call, 800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Bread and Butter, newly opened restaurant in North Amherst Mill District, offering breakfast and lunch daily from traditional staples to chef specialties such as duck confit hash and maple sriracha pork belly, breadandbutteramherst.com. Sutter Meats, King Street, Northampton, providing fresh, local, pasture-raised beef, pork, and lamb. Additional house-made items include rotisserie chickens, bone broths, bacon jam, and handmade sausages, suttermeats.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. George Heigl, Cowan's representative, specializing in evaluating, marketing, buying, and selling of jewelry, fine art, historic firearms, American Indian art, and more, 518-396-7974. And Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, now in their summer season, featuring local producer-only foods and handmade products every Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on River Street in downtown Troy, troymarket.org.
Welcome back to the show, boys and girls. It's a Food Friday. We're joined today by John Winnick of the Cooking School at Market Bistro and Nancy Huggins, also of the Cooking School at Market Bistro. Nancy Huggins was value-added. Didn't know she was coming today, but what a great contribution you've made, Nancy.
Well, thank you.
Fantastic. The National Weather Service in Albany has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for southeastern Montgomery County, northwestern Albany County, and Schoharie County, as well as southwestern Schenectady County, until 3:15. So here we go. The thunderstorm warning, the severe thunderstorm warning is for... John? You weren't listening. Nancy?
South Schenectady.
Southwestern Schenectady.
Warren.
Ding, 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 ding. No, not Warren.
Montgomery.
Schoharie County. Right. Northwestern Albany County.
I'm a chef. I'm not a weatherman. Come on.
Southeastern Montgomery County. Okay, there you go. Well, you did fairly well. You just, you know what, stick to the kitchen. We'll be fine.
Okay.
Let's go to Ron in Sloansville. Ron, you're on.
Hi. Years ago, a coworker shared a recipe with us that sort of defies description, really. It's called a Swedish apple pie, but the way you make it is nothing like making a pie. It does stipulate that you have to start with a glass dish. And the reason why I thought of this was the previous caller mentioned something about no-knead bread dough. And you just cut up a bunch of apples. It doesn't even give you a quantity. You just cut up a bunch of apples, you know, core them, peel them, and then you make a cinnamon sugar mix to sprinkle over the top. And the batter itself, after you mix it, you pour it all over everything, and then you put it in the oven and bake it. And it comes out awesome, and it really is something that would be geared for kids to work on.
It sounds, like
I said, it defies description. It doesn't meet any conventional method for making pie.
Probably because they're using a
pie. What is it?
probably because they're using a pie dish. So that's why it comes out looking like a pie. And it sounds a lot like a cobbler to me, where you pour a batter over the fruit. And it sounds delicious.
Yeah,
I've never made one, but I bet you that'd be great for the kids.
Sweet as
because the
pie.
Apples don't have to be perfectly cut.
Yeah, and the most amazing thing is, you know, you don't add any liquid of any kind, and it comes out really moist.
Yep, yeah, that's the apples and the...
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Ron, thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Appreciate the call. You guys ever make the Ritz mock apple pie over at the school?
No.
Have you ever tried making one of those?
No.
I did it twice.
How was it?
After seeing the back of the Ritz box for 25, 30 years. They're great.
Good.
They taste just like an apple pie.
Nice.
I don't know the background of them. Maybe there was a time when there was rationing and there were no apples. But so maybe for the kids next time, the Ritz mock apple. Maybe you get a little synergy.
Getting
all
kinds of ideas.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, here comes Joe Donahue. You know, Joe wants to try one of the cupcakes.
All right.
Would you like one, Joe? All right, good.
That one's got your name all over.
WAMC's Joe Donahue is here to have a cupcake. Joe, if you wouldn't mind letting us know later if it was okay. Now,
thank
I got,
you very much.
You're welcome.
Are you responsible?
No, no.
Yes.
John Winnick is responsible. Nancy Huggins here could not condescend to bake for us, even though she's the baker. So there you go. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Kernan in Glenville, you're on.
Hello, can you hear me? I just pushed another button.
You're on. I pushed a button as well.
Okay. At this moment, while you are speaking, I'm preparing a quiche Lorraine, or out the quiche pie, you know.
Lovely.
Love a quiche.
And I'm using my mother-in-law's procedure, which I would like to recite to you and get the expert's view of what they think of it.
First of all, do you like your mother-in-law?
I like her pie.
Oh. All right. Carry on.
Of course. In fact, when she calls me, she says, "This is your favorite mother-in-law." That's true.
All right. Go ahead.
Take a quarter cup of oil and 2.5 tablespoons of ice water, and you swish them together, mix them up good and strong in a bowl. Then you add a cup of flour and cut it up with a pastry blender or a fork. You roll it into a ball and put it in the refrigerator for a while. Then you take it out and you lay it between two sheets of wax paper, flatten it out with your fist or hand, and roll it out thin. That's how far I've gotten so far.
Okay.
Then you peel off the top layer of wax paper, slip something underneath it, such as a cutting board or something, lay the pie pan on top of that, flip the whole thing over, and it falls into place. Then you blind bake it. Well, the way I blind bake it is I put another pie pan on top of it because I don't have all those little balls to make it flat.
Mm-hmm.
Then you throw in your quiche mixture, which is essentially a pudding, and anything else you want in there, including broccoli.
Yeah.
What do you think, expert?
Well, you got me. I love quiche, and it's a little different technique as far as putting the pie dough together, but because
you're just using oil,
instead of
solid,
right? Yeah,
but it works.
It works. Yep.
So, what is blind baking?
You bake the crust with nothing in it, so you can fill the pan with beans or rice.
I got you. So I guess it's okay.
Or stick another pan on top of it.
Or stick another pan on top of it. Yep, that works too.
So, Kernan, I guess the bottom line here is your mother-in-law gets a qualified thumbs up from the chef.
Oh, good. How about me?
Oh, you're fine.
You're
doing great.
Just don't argue with her, right?
Yeah. Thanks a lot, man.
No.
Appreciate the call.
Well, I just thought I'd share that idea with you, and I'm going to sign off now.
All right, get back to work. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Aldo. Aldo in Greene County, you're on.
How are you?
Good.
I've had a few questions about the no-knead bread.
Okay. Well, they're not the experts, but we'll give it a shot. Callers.
I've made it quite a few times, and the article was by Mark Bittman. It was about 10 years ago in the New York Times.
Uh-huh.
And it's got a pre-hydrated batter. And you let that sit for any place from 18 to 24 hours covered after you've mixed it. Hmm. And the glutens form by themselves naturally. It takes away the kneading process. And it also helps to impart a little bit more flavor into the...
Okay,
you
sure.
Know, otherwise be just regular bread flour.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, after you're done with that, you knead it just for a minute or two, let it do its second rise. And then you put it in a very hot oven in a preheated cast iron or heavy Dutch oven and cover it, and you let it cook in there for and steam itself. And that way you're simulating a professional oven. You do that for about 20 minutes to a half hour, take the top off, and finish cooking it for, again, maybe another 15 to 20 minutes, and it forms a beautiful crust, and it's a very impressive loaf of bread.
Mm.
Now, the one gentleman said that, well, I think what he was getting at, and maybe it was difficult to hear, was that his children thought the bread was too light.
No, it's too dense. Too dense.
And I think he meant the other, though. He wanted it more dense.
That's not what he said, but you might be right. I mean, maybe we're all wrong, and you're right. You know, but I got to bring up one question.
If he did want it more dense, just let me finish my thought, because I'll lose it. I'm older than you, Ray.
Hard to believe.
if he did want it more dense, then what he would do is substitute perhaps one-third wheat flour, and that would knock a lot of the holes out real quick.
Nancy is nodding her head. Now, Aldo, I gotta take issue here just for a minute. You said you need it for a minute. That, to me, that's not a no need. If you're needing it even for
Well, according to the recipe in the Times, they really don't have you need it at all. They have you knock the air out of it. When you're forming it into the ball the second time, I find that it's easier to knock the air out of it and knead it into a nice tight ball to let it do its second rise. I just find that's more convenient.
Okay.
And I also let it do its second rise in a piece of parchment paper. That way I can pick that up and drop it into the pot.
Okay. Nancy, thumbs up on that?
Yep. Sure.
Yeah. Nancy's with you, Aldo. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a good weekend. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Mike over in Saratoga Springs. Mike, how you doing?
Pretty good. I just have a question about, there was a question that one of the experts said, what kind of flour? The guy said just any kind of flour. Is there a big difference, like all-purpose flour or some other kind of flour? And is there a difference in how they produce flour now than what they did 50 years ago?
Okay, this is good.
There probably is somewhat of a difference, but my question to him was if he was using whole wheat flour, often people think they're doing something healthier for themselves, but you can't use just a straight whole wheat flour because it makes a very dense mix, so you would need to incorporate some white flour into that. Cake flour is a little lighter than that. There's also flour for making pasta. So there are different flours that do have different attributes as far as the amount of gluten and things like that would decide which one you would use for which product you're making.
Because you mentioned the sifting. And when I learned to bake over 50 years ago from my mother, we always sifted
everything,
the flour no matter what we were making.
Yep, and people don't anymore because sometimes it'll say... Well, I think a lot of us are just time starved. You could still sift if you wanted to. That just really lightens up the flour a little bit because, you know, the more humidity there is in the air, the more dense your flour becomes. If people knock the cup when they're measuring it, it'll actually allow you to put maybe a little bit more than a cup in there. So sifting kind of eliminates that.
All right. Thank you for the call. And our number here is 800-348-2551. Over to Cindy in upstate Vermont. Cindy, you're on.
Hi. I was really surprised that you guys were like, kids shouldn't be cooking in the kitchen, or this is really a huge surprise, because my daughter's been cooking since she was like 2 or 3.
Oh, well, I think you may have missed it, because chef instructor John Winnick and Nancy Huggins are with the cooking school at Market Bistro, and they teach kids to cook.
Right.
Oh, I know, but some of the stuff that they were saying, like they don't give them sharp knives, and
well, you have to remember we're dealing with 10 or 12 children at a time.
10 or 12 at a time, right?
Safety's a big concern.
And also, you know, they have to lawyer this to death. I'm sure the insurance companies are all over it. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I know my daughter was like 8 or 9 when she took her first cooking class. It was mostly adults. I took the cooking class just so she could take it because that was a requirement.
Mm-hmm. Right. And
she had better knife skills than half the adults in the class at that point.
So is she a better cook than you, Cindy?
Oh, yeah. She went to the Culinary Institute and graduated
cool.
and, nice. And you know, it has all these credentials. I'm still, of course, the better cook.
Of course.
But
of course.
She has all the pieces of paper to prove that she's
right.
the better cook.
And you know what we try to do, Cindy? We really try to give them that plastic knife first just to get their technique down because not everyone is safe with that sharp blade.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, we graduate to the sharp blade, though.
Well, Cindy, thank you for the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, have a great weekend. And over to, let's go to John and Troy. John and Troy, you're on.
Hey, how are you? I'm just calling in response to the previous caller who mentioned Swedish apple pie.
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me of my wife is Russian, and she makes something almost identical, which she calls charlotka. And that's, you know, pretty much the same thing. It's, sliced apples put in a pan, and she makes some kind of magic batter. I don't know how she does it, but I just wanted to put a name to it. You could Google charlotka if you wanted to learn more about it.
Thank you. We will.
He's writing it down. So thank you for that. We appreciate the call, John.
Sure. No problem. Thank you.
Bye now. You know, all of this Swedish pie business reminds me, you know, remember, I have the most basic of skills in most everything, but especially in cooking. And so Bisquick, you often will throw apples in. You'll make the batter and just dump it on and bake it. That's what it sounds like to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to the phones we go, and let's see who's waiting longest. Let's go to Judy in Palmer, Mass. Judy, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
I am wondering how to cook a pork chop so that it comes out moist.
Okay.
Is it the pork chop? Or the technique. I mean, we tend to blame it on the pork chop.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said this. I was just having a conversation with a buddy of mine about his kids that won't eat a pork chop because it's dry. And that's usually in technique. It's also in the pork chop itself. Don't be stingy on the size. Get a nice 2-inch thick cut pork. They call it a rib chop with the bone in it or boneless.
Okay.
And you want to put a good rub on it. Season it really well on all four sides. Sear it in a pan or in the oven, but I like to do it in a cast iron skillet. And then you put it in the oven and dry cook it. You don't need to add water or anything. It shall stay moist because you've seared it properly and your juices won't come out. And then you got to let it rest before you slice into it, at least 10 minutes. So that's how you get them moist.
Okay, so when you sear it,
go ahead.
Well, if it's a bone in, you would just do the two sides. But if it's boneless, would you have to do the edges as well?
I would turn it so you get it all on all sides like you would a big thick steak. Yeah.
All right. I'll try that. All thank right. you.
Good
Thanks
luck.
Thanks a lot. You know, I think my wife actually brined pork chops recently, and they came out amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, a couple of emails here really quickly, and then we'll get back to the phones if we have time. This one's from Jake. When making something like mac and cheese, it comes out great from the oven. But when trying to reheat for leftovers, it all separates into oil. Is there something that can be done with the flour, roux base, to allow for reheating so it doesn't separate later?
That sounds like a little bit too much cheese. So when cheese does do that, and I've had that happen to me before, you probably got so much in there that it doesn't want to come back together. The roux won't hold up to a reheat most of the time. So you got to kind of watch the amount of cheese you're putting in there.
All right. This one's from Chris, who says, I have a wonderful chocolate cake recipe called No Fail Chocolate Cake. The taste and the texture are delicious, but when I bake the cake, the center of the cake always seems to fall. Is there anything I can do to try to get the middle to rise? Also, the recipe calls for buttermilk, but I use whole milk with a little vinegar in it. Could this be the problem?
Probably not. That's what I would use, too, because I don't buy buttermilk usually. So it might be your oven. There are also straps you can put around a cake pan that allows the outside not to cook as fast, which would let the middle cook a little more and rise up, and then it would hopefully all cook at the same time so that it wouldn't fall. If you're jostling the oven, you remember how everybody used to have to keep quiet if there was a cake in the oven?
Yeah.
So it could be things like that.
Okay. So the website, I know you guys have a website for this, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Market Bistro.
You know, Nancy, you really need to prepare before.
Marketbistro.com/cooking school.
/cooking school.
Okay, and you can find out more. When's the next boot camp?
The next boot camp is scheduled for July 12th through the 14th. That's a Tuesday through Thursday.
Yeah, and so do you wear athletic outfit for that sort of thing? Or
yeah, bring your sneakers.
Really?
Yeah.
Just sneakers, but we provide aprons, everything that you need, and you can register either for all 3 days or just one of the days.
Okay, and so one more time, the website, then we'll wrap it up here.
Marketbistro.com/cookingschool.
Well, Chef John Winnick, wonderful job. We'll see you again, I'm
Thank
sure.
You.
Sure.
Glad
Nancy
to be back.
Nancy Huggins, did you enjoy yourself?
I did. Now I can say I've been on the radio.
You may well be back, but you know, we got to bring a little something next time.
I'm bringing bacon cookies, I heard.
Ah! You do that and you'll be a regular. Thanks once again to our guests. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from the Chef Shop in Great Barrington, celebrating 25 years offering tools and services for cooking enthusiasts, including Zwilling Knives, La Cruza Cookware, cooking classes and knife sharpening, thechefsshop.com. Terrapin Restaurant, Rhinebeck, New York, celebrating 13 years in Rhinebeck with refreshed menus and a farm-to-table meets barn-to-table dining room renovation by local artisans, terrapinrestaurant.com. And Gloriosa and Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts, new barn, wedding venue, and heated antique greenhouse offering tailored catering, garden-to-vase flowers, and four-bed and breakfast rooms, gloriosaco.com. Whew, a lot of tongue twisters there. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, Sterling Service this week. Your phones were answered by Barb King. Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Have a wonderful weekend. A very safe 4th of July. We'll see you next week.